Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. This is Johnny Tan, author of From My Mama's Kitchen, Food for the Soul, Recipes for a Living. Welcome to my weekly From My Mama's Kitchen talk radio show. My guest for this morning is Elizabeth Salter. She is an award-winning author, co-director, and co-owner of Communication Works. Since April is Autism Awareness Month, Elizabeth and I will be discussing her book, Make Social Learning Stick, How to Guide and Nurture Social Competence in Children. Good morning, Elizabeth. Welcome to From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio. How are you doing this morning?
I'm great. Thanks so much for having me. I'm excited to share information.
Wonderful. It is a pleasure to have you on the air with me. Make Social Learning Stick is a very attractive and easy read. The book has excellent illustrations and very thorough, so congratulations.
Thank you so much. That was the intent, so I'm glad that's how it's being received.
Wonderful. Let us start by getting to know you a little better. Please give us a quick walkthrough of your life from childhood to the present moment.
Okay. Well, I was born and raised in Oakland, California. Small family. I have one sister who's developmentally delayed. She is 2 years older than me, and we both went through Oakland Public Schools, and she was in special education throughout our schooling. Mm-hmm. When I went to college, I wasn't really sure what I wanted to do, but I was interested in teaching or nursing. And I took a class outside of my profession and or my degree and learned about the profession of speech and language pathology. I was instantly drawn to it because you can work in the hospitals and the schools. And I was familiar with it because I sat in many, many waiting rooms with my sister in speech therapy and physical therapy and many other therapies throughout our childhood. So I changed my major, and while I was in graduate school, I became very interested in autism and social communication, and I decided to specialize in that area. I loved working with these complex children and figuring out how to help them communicate and socialize in more functional and feasible ways. So then after graduate school, I worked for a company that actually contracted me to both the schools and the hospitals so I could get a little feel of both. And I worked for a school that was for severely impaired children with autism and behaviors. And this school, students that couldn't fit into the public school system because of their severe behaviors. And traditionally, if there weren't schools like this, they would have been institutionalized back in the days. The philosophy of the school was that behavior was communication. So I worked closely with behavior consultants to determine what their behavior was communicating, and then we would come up with systems and strategies and tools and therapy to help them be more functional. So this would be things like sign language or gestures or pictures or even communication devices or building their language to help them communicate more functionally. A lot of these children had low language and low cognition. So I love this job. I ended up working there full-time for about 8 years. I started researching a little bit more about working with higher functioning children with autism, and Michelle Garcia Winner was coming out with her philosophy of social thinking, and I became very interested in that. And I wasn't able to implement that strategy at the school that I was working, so I started working on the side privately after school. And I partnered with some other therapists and rented classroom space, and we started running these social groups that were very beneficial. So word of mouth went out in the community, and parents told parents, and like-minded professionals heard about it. And in 2004, I partnered with another speech therapist and working mom, Hillary Kissick, and we developed an organization called Communication Works. And we started out with a small suite, and it just grew and grew, and other like-minded professionals came on board and worked with us who were very passionate about doing work with social communication and self-regulation. Mm-hmm. So now we're a group of speech therapists and occupational therapists, and we have an educational therapist who does executive function coaching, and we see about 175 clients or more a week, both in groups and individually. And then on a personal note, too, that sort of about my past and history, mm-hmm. is that I mentioned that my sister has is developmentally delayed, mm-hmm. and I also have a cousin who has three sons, one with autism, one with apraxia of speech, and one with fluency challenges, which is stuttering. And then also most recently, my oldest son, who just turned 11 2 weeks ago, he was diagnosed with ADHD and learning disabilities. Mm-hmm. So I've had to, as a parent, navigate the system and figure out what he needs to maximize his learning potential. And so obviously this is not just a profession for me. I'm very passionate personally, and it's affected my family tremendously. So I'm very happy to share information, and I'm glad this book is out there to help other families.
Fantastic. It sounds like looking from the perspective of a spiritual guidance. Apparently, you started out in your life being fascinated with speech and language pathology. Somehow, all your life, you've been devoted towards it, and now you find that, wow, it really gets close to home. And you have developed this amount of information. You're an expert in this field. So it's like certain things in life that we do as far as career-wise, it's meant to be, so to speak.
Absolutely. Yeah, I feel like, you know, it's funny because before I had children, I knew that, you know, my sister was developmentally delayed and my cousin had her son before I had my sons. Mm-hmm. And I sort of said, you know, it's in my family and I'm so grateful to have this knowledge and experience as a therapist. So if it does become in my family as well, I can manage it. So, and I think that it also gives me another perspective, being a therapist, also being a mom, but being a mom of a child who learns and thinks differently, I can really relate to them, and that's been a blessing as well.
To me, it's a very powerful credential to have, because then you are an experiential counselor.
Absolutely. Yes.
Yeah, so it makes a big difference. Why did you write Make Social Learning Stick?
Well, like I said, you know, at our center, there are a group of very passionate and devoted therapists, and one of our emphasis is supporting parents and caregivers. Social is happening all the time throughout our lives, and we only see these children, you know, once or twice a week and provide the tools and intervention. And so we incorporate the parents and the caregivers, whether it's a nanny or a grandparent, into the sessions, whether they come into the sessions with us on a weekly basis, or at the end of each group session, we provide parent and caregiver training for social communication and self-regulation, and we go over the strategies and tools that we've worked on. So over the years, I've realized that, you know, parents understand this, but they kept asking, you know, what does this look like at home? How do I really do this? So we've tried to make it more and more functional and more practical, not providing heavy, deep knowledge or curriculum that, you know, we know from our training, but just really, what do they do at the dinner table? And how can I help my child transition to school or be successful at the birthday party? So that's a lot of the training that we provide at the center. And so I've gathered all this information, and the book has been in the works for about 5 or 8 years, just sort of compiling all this knowledge. And then also, too, me as a mom experiencing these things myself and realizing that I know all this curriculum and tools and strategies, but I don't always use it with my children because it takes pen and paper and time to do. So I've really wanted to make it as functional as possible, and that's what the book is all about. And I also have gathered information from leading professionals in the field, from going to conferences and mentorships and collaborating with them. And I wanted to put their information into a very functional terminology and format for parents to be able to use. I sort of call myself a butterfly catcher and releaser because I love gathering and sharing information. And I feel like that was sort of my calling in writing this book.
Very interesting. In going through your book and reading the book, I see a lot of information. I mean, it's an excellent book for not necessarily just for someone who is autistic, but I think this book helps children in general.
Absolutely. It's for all children. And I'm glad that you saw that, because it's definitely not just for children. And I, you know, I work with a lot of children with autism and ADHD, but this is written for all parents and all children.
Yeah, it makes it easy and it's fun. That's what I like about the book. It's very engaging.
Oh, good. I'm glad. It's meant to be. It's the illustrations are very lighthearted, and some people, you know, some professionals who write more heavy wonderful books. They were thinking, oh, I thought it was going to be more simple. And but yeah. They said it's very thought out and in-depth, even though the pictures and the colors are very bright and engaging.
Right. Right. And that's the whole idea. You have someone who is actually in the process itself as you are. So I think that
yes.
added so much value to this book, intrinsic value that perhaps other books does not have.
Yes, I'm living it, so I know what works. And what doesn't work. My kids will tell me that all the time. Trial and error for sure.
I certainly understand that. Please give us a synopsis of the book.
Okay. Well, the book is sort of a go-to guide or how-to resource for parents and caregivers and teachers, and I'll explain that in a minute. But it really is there for helping parents infuse teachable moments into their daily routines and activities and to increase social and emotional and executive function and life skills. So the book is laid out in three different sections: home, community, and holidays and special events. And there's over 185 activities in various scenarios, like bedtime routines and at the dinner table or story time. And in the community, there's sports events and around the neighborhood or at the mall. And very, very simple activities that parents can do with their children to help them build these skills and know what's expected for social behavior. And they work on things like following directions and thinking about others, increasing flexibility and emotional regulation, understanding social cues and increasing conversational skills, and a lot more. The format, like you mentioned, is supposed to be very friendly and fun and easy for parents to just dive in and be able to just go to a page, and if they're going to go out to dinner, they can say, oh, eating out, let's see what we can work on for social emotional skills or executive function when we're out at the restaurant. So very, very simple and easy for parents to just pick up and use, to give to a nanny, to give to a grandparent that might be there, and just flip through the pages and use what's needed in the moment. It's also good for teachers because it gives ideas to teachers on some simple activities that they might be able to modify and use in their school environment. Or also they can photocopy the pages or work with parents if they're training parents like we are, and just photocopy the pages and say, okay, Halloween is coming up, we're working on these art activities at school to work on sequencing or practicing what to do out when you're trick-or-treating, and this is what you can do at home. And so they can really engage the parents by photocopying and using these strategies at home.
Fantastic.
Yeah. I also had leading experts, like I said, that I've been trained by and have collaborated with. Leah Kuypers, who wrote The Zones of Regulation, Michelle Garcia-Winner, who's developed a social thinking curriculum, Sarah Ward, who's a speech pathologist and executive functioning, Pamela Wolfberg, who's a special educator who specializes in autism and play, and Emily Rubin, who wrote the CERTS model for social communication and emotional regulation. And then Carrie Dunn-Baron, who developed the 5-point scale, which is also in this book. It helps kids with understanding the gradation of various behaviors. I had all of them contribute to this book. So it's specifically their thoughts and ideas for how it can be used throughout the child's natural environment. So these are people that I highly respect, and they actually contributed to the book directly, so I was very honored to have that. And Michelle Garcia-Winner allowed me to put some social thinking vocabulary in there, which are things that we train our parents in at the center and use frequently. So now that parents can see what this really looks like on a day-to-day basis.
Sure. You have tremendous amount of information in the book. I mean, this is pretty much a one-stop shopping. It's loaded. Now you have a complete how-to book that allows people to go to the specific area of opportunities that we want to work on, whether it's today or for the next several weeks or several days and so forth. So you have, for lack of a better term, a buffet of activities that they can choose from.
Yes, yes, definitely. Similar to the what I've mentioned as a sort of a social learning diet.
I was going to ask you, why did you coin the term social learning diet?
Yeah, exactly. It just fits right in. So just like a healthy food diet, children need to have consistent intake and exposure to social examples throughout their day. And and so I think that it's similar to, you know, thinking about that, you know, regime of having protein and fat and water and sleep throughout a child's brain development. We also need to sprinkle in the practice and explanations and build the awareness of parents. So they need these recipes. The parents need the recipes to be able to provide this diet for the children, to be able to sprinkle it throughout their day and provide this social learning diet for them for success.
Wonderful. How does social competence contribute to a child's developmental success?
That is a great question. You know, and I'm extremely biased because this is my area of passion and focus, but I think it's, you know, social competence, and I put in there emotional competence as well, is one of the most important things that children need to develop in, because, you know, academics, if they're not regulated, then they're not going to be able to focus for the academics. And so I think this is very, very important for them to work on, and it enables them to make friends, and enables them to work in small groups in school or at camps outside of school. It helps them to understand their own emotions and the emotions of others, to be able to have empathy and think about others. If they can regulate their own behavior depending on what's going on in the social situation, or find a tool that can help them calm themselves, like we all have to do in life, then they can be more successful. We can help them with building awareness of social cues so they don't misread different situations and interpret things wrong and then not be able to join in or get their feelings hurt in different areas. Also, executive function is a huge part of social competence, which is being able to have situational awareness and being able to plan for the future based on past experiences. So all of these things, as you can imagine, are accumulation of a child and a person's well-being, and how they can focus with academics and in have independence later on with their life skills and overall mental health. And Most children pick this up, social and emotional, throughout their lives by modeling of their parents or people in their lives and watching others and just cognitive development in general. But some kids don't, and that's what one of the hallmark challenges of those with ADHD and autism. And so it's very important for us to provide the tools and strategies for them to be able to do this and give them a little boost for understanding social competence to be able to be successful.
So true. Who would benefit most from this book?
So we mentioned, you know, obviously parents who have children who have social challenges or emotional challenges, like those diagnosed with autism. There's also ADHD and executive function challenges or sensory processing challenges. But I would also, like we mentioned before, it's for all parents and caregivers. You know, we are all supporting our child's social and emotional development throughout our lives, and it's just a way for it to become very simple and easy so that parents can use and even give to extended family members or, like I mentioned before, babysitters that might be caring for the children after school or on the weekends. And, you know, just to make it low fuss and not a lot of extra work, but just for them to be able to pick up and use. I also mentioned, too, that professionals have been very pleased with the book, because sometimes they struggle with time management in terms of they have so much going on that they have to do at the school with the children and meeting IEP goals and working with teachers. And so it can be a struggle to have the time to engage the parents, but it's so important to collaborate with parents. And so professionals have said it's been wonderful to have the book to be able to say, oh, you know, here's a book that I read to the children, and, you know, this is how you can read literature to your children at home. So they photocopy one of the pages and they send it home as sort of fun work for parents to do with their kids at home. So professionals can use it as well as parents.
Wonderful. Is there a good age to get started?
You know, the book is geared towards parents and caregivers of children in preschool or elementary school, Some of the activities can be adapted for teens and even adults in terms of understanding hidden rules and future planning and things like that and life skills. But really, a good age to get started for social and emotional competence is at birth, because our children are developing this right when they come out of the womb in terms of gravitating towards the voices of people and faces. And, you know, 2 months, babies are smiling and cooing and wanting to engage with other humans. And so a lot of this is developing early on. At 1 year of age, you know, one of our exciting moments of speech and language pathologists is when a child develops joint attention, which is when two people are focused on the same item or object or situation, and then they can engage in social communication around that. And that's when the language and all the fun starts in terms of the dance of social communication. So this is all happening very early on, and it's good for parents to be aware of.
Wonderful. What is the best way to use this book from a parent's perspective in terms of getting their psyche ready to implement some of the things that you have in the book?
Yeah, the book is, like I said, it's divided up into three different categories. There's home, and then community, and holidays and special events. And realistically, the beginning of the book has an overview of what social regulation is, which is the combination of self-regulation and social communication. And I've outlined that in a very simple way, just so parents can engage and realize, oh, I understand what this means, or this is for my child. And then I've gone into a little bit of how to use the book, and it's really meant to be just used as needed. So we're actually coming out with another version of the book that has a stand so that it can be on a spiral band and it can sit up. So say you're in the kitchen and you're working on food preparation, you can go to that section and say, okay, I would like my child to help me with food prep for dinner. And then you can say, oh, this activity here is great for sequencing and how I can engage my child in the process of cooking dinner. And so it's really meant to be used as needed by, you know, looking what you're going to be doing next, like food prep or in the car, going to a birthday party, or maybe, you know, parents are starting to think about summer activities. So maybe it's 4th of July or different things like that. And you just go to the activity that or the page that you need to be focusing on in the moment and pick an activity to use and go from there. Each of the pages has hidden rules. So, for instance, because a lot of our children who do struggle with social communication, they struggle to understand the hidden rules of various social situations, which means like the rules that we understand that are sort of innate to us, like the difference between sitting in a library, the rules, the social rules there, you know, quiet voices and read to yourself versus birthday party, which you can be, you know, more energetic and playful. Some of our children with autism and social learning challenges, they don't understand those hidden rules. And so on each page, I've outlined the hidden rules for the various situations. So, for instance, 4th of July, the hidden rules you might talk about of what it's like to be at a parade, or there might be loud noises, and you want to talk about personal space in crowded areas. Or, for instance, at the movies, like I mentioned, you know, that it's quiet voices, and, you know, you can talk afterwards, but we want to be careful about the people next to us because they want to be focusing on the movie. So there's ways for parents to incorporate the hidden rules into each activity. So it's meant to be used as needed. And also one of the best things about it is I'm hoping it inspires parents to come up with their own ideas. So I've given some suggestions and activities in these books, in this book, but I'm hoping that parents will be inspired, like, oh, that's a great idea. And we could use that when we go on our camping trip versus a car trip or something like that.
That's wonderful. Your book is pretty much situation-driven and activity-driven.
Yes.
Wonderful.
So.
Are there challenges that parents need to be aware of in all the different categories when we talk about at home and in the community section as well as the holiday and special events?
Absolutely. So you know, I think that we're all living such a busy, busy life in terms of, you know, getting our kids to various places, and a lot of us are working parents, and it's hard to be mindful. And I would say that one of the biggest challenges is to be able to remember to do these things and to remember to open the book even, and to remember to incorporate the vocabulary and maybe talk about some of the hidden rules before you go to these places. And of course there's siblings in the mix that we have to think about in terms of incorporating them. And I would highly recommend incorporating siblings into various situations to learn from this as well. I also think that, you know, the challenges are that things change. So, you know, you have one plan for cooking dinner, and you know, it might turn into, oh, we don't have spaghetti noodles. So there, you know, that might be a sequencing that you're going to work on with your child, and you don't have the spaghetti noodles. So then, you know, take that as a teachable moment in itself and think of a plan B. Maybe you use a different type of noodle, or maybe you change it and make sloppy joes. So there's just so many different things that we're thinking about as we're working with these children that can be challenges, but you can always turn those challenges into teachable moments and try to be mindful and realize the tools that we're using throughout our daily lives that we can help children with. So I can give some examples of
sure.
some of the activities that are in the book if you'd like, to give a better
yes.
picture
yes.
of what mm-hmm. this looks like. Okay, so at home, you know, we're always reading with our children, and there are so many books out that help with specific things that our children need. For instance, there's many, many books out there that teach about personal space. Like there's one called Personal Space Camp. There's a lot of books out there that teach kids about feelings, that show different scenarios or facial expressions, and we can read those books to teach specific social and emotional skills that our kids need. There's books on if your kids transitioning into kindergarten or even middle school or different situations. You can pick up those books from the library or the bookstores and read those books to your children to help them with these specific situations. My another colleague and I have written a book called Whole Body Listening, Larry. We've written one for home and one for school. And these books have been extremely popular with parents and teachers to teach what it's like to listen with your whole body, which is a concept developed by Suzanne Truesdale back in 1990. And it really goes into what you do with your eyes, your brain, your mouth, your hands, your feet, your body, your heart, to listen with your whole body. And it's been very, very beneficial. And then there's books, just regular books can be great to work on. So even if you're doing your child likes books like The Hungry Caterpillar or things like that, you can work on what's going to happen next in terms of thinking about predicting and outcomes and, you know, sequencing and books that, you know, might have great facial expressions in them. You can say, oh, how do you think that person is feeling? Oh, how do you think the dad is feeling? Can you look at his hands? His hands are on his hip and his face is frowning and his eyebrows are looking upset. How do you think he feels? Why do you think he feels that way? Look at that messy room. The kids are jumping on the bed. How do you think mommy feels when you do that? And just relating it to real life situations can be wonderful for kids. So literature is a great tool to use at home with children. Most families have reading time, and even with older kids, you can do that with their books that they're reading, Harry Potter, and predicting and thinking about the thoughts of others in this literature. We do a lot of work with my son at home on calming mm-hmm. strategies because,
mm-hmm.
You know, it's important to work on being able to stay calm, but it's hard to do it in the moment when we're really upset. And that's actually not a good time for teaching, is when we're very, very upset because our brain is flooded with emotion. So it's great to work on calming strategies at home, and bedtime is a wonderful time for that because kids really don't like to go to bed, if you've noticed. And so you can bump up bedtime a little bit earlier and work on breathing strategies or yoga positions, or what we do a lot of at my house is mindfulness. We work on breathing, and breathing is, and focusing on your breath is really challenging for my son, and it became to be something that he was irritated by. So we came up with another tool that incorporates mindfulness, which is, he calls it M&M. Can you give me some M&Ms, Mom? Which is mindful massage. And so I massage his back and his arms, and we breathe in and hold, and breathe out and hold while I'm massaging key points in his back and his arms. And that has become very, very helpful for our family. Regulation, I feel like, should be the fourth R, reading, writing, arithmetic, and regulation, or regulation first, because it's so important for our children. And there's a lot that parents can do to help that to be preventative. And then there's things like at the dinner table where we can practice conversation skills, you know, asking what were your highlights of the day, your highs and lows, and things, you know, parents can have rituals of talking about what they're grateful for from their day, or something that somebody might have done nice for them, or even celebrating mistakes, because I think that it's very important for our children to realize that mistakes are all about how we learn, and they need to feel comfortable with making mistakes. And our kids make a lot of mistakes, and that's okay, because the kids that are very perfectionistic or might have some social anxiety have a hard time with, you know, accepting mistakes. And so cherishing those moments at the dinner table or other times can be very helpful. We have community, you know, when you're out in the community, you know, when we're always driving our kids around to various places, you know, carting them to, whether it's a music appointment or birthday parties or just on errands. And we can do a lot in the car in terms of priming them. I talk a lot about priming or briefing them for what's to be expected, because the number one reason for children feeling anxious is because they don't know what's expected. And that's the same for all of us. We all want to know what to wear at the dinner party, or, you know, what's it going to look like? Is it going to be outside or inside? And kids need that too. So priming them for what it's going to look like in the car can be very, very beneficial. And also debriefing about how it went when you're driving home. So thinking about the birthday party on the way there, you might say, okay, well, that we're going to give them the present and we're going to play around. I think we're going to be at the park so we can play tag a little bit, and there's going to be a birthday cake. And who do you think should blow out the candles? Whose birthday is it? We need to be thinking about the birthday person. And then on the way home, you can say, oh, I really liked the way that you waited and you didn't blow out the candles. I can see how you were wanting to do that, but it was Johnny's birthday, so you let him do that. And you know, I forgot to tell you that some birthday parties don't have goodie bags. And so, you know, maybe next time when we go to the birthday party, we won't ask and be upset about the fact that they don't have a goodie bag, and sort of debriefing about how it went and providing feedback on the fly about how we can prepare our children and then be proactive for the next time when they're going to be going to these places again. They can also be doing a ton of social observing out in the public. So at parks and in the car or at the ball, is watching other people and learning from others. You can clue them in and say, let's sit here on the bench and watch these people at the mall. If they're going into that cooking store, what do you think that they're looking for? Or if they're going into the pet store, what do you think they might be thinking about? And you can, oh, that child looks really upset. They're coming out of the pet store and they don't have a pet. What do you think they might be thinking? And you can help them identify facial expressions and perspective taking by observation of the thoughts of others. So there's so much that parents can be doing on the fly, even in busy lives, but just being more aware of these things and helping out with holidays and special events, like we mentioned, the 4th of July or birthday parties, writing cards for others, going shopping for others, is stepping into other people's shoes and thinking about what their interests are. So just making parents more aware and providing them the tools, and what I mentioned before is the recipes, it can make them feel more confident and remind them to do these things in these natural environments.
Very interesting. How long does it take for a particular social skill to stick?
That's a very good question. And I have to say that it's different for all children. So there's the autism spectrum disorders. It's called a spectrum for a reason, because there's many children who are very severely impaired with lower language, and some of them are nonverbal, and social is extremely, extremely difficult. So what I say in terms of expectations for those children is it can be very slow, and our goals are different. You know, even for them to have eye gaze and looking at gazing into a situation, or, you know, using their body and coming near other kids on the playground can be an accomplishment for them. And then there's children who don't have a diagnosis or have what used to be called Asperger syndrome. It's all actually lumped under autism now. They really just need a lot of this scaffolded and to understand the hidden rules. And they can become very successful with just explaining these things. It is a process. It takes a lot of practice. And that's why we have to work together as a whole. So it varies for children on how long that it can stick. And so we all need to work together and figure out what the abilities are of the specific child, and then, you know, make sure that our expectations are in line, so that we realize that, you know, we're going to make them progress, and some might be faster than others, and that's okay. If we're all working together and we see that children are working hard to accomplish their goals, and we can be patient with it sticking.
Basically, it does take a team effort. Everyone in the family needs to contribute to this particular way of approaching the process. And number two, obviously, patient is the key word, because it does take time. Obviously, I would think there's certain activities learned stick faster than others.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think, you know, expectations are really important, and, you know, meeting a child where they're at, and also parents too. I have to say, if professionals are listening out there, I have to say that sometimes parents aren't quite ready to embrace these things. And it takes a little bit of time for us to help them understand and build awareness of their child's needs. And so, you know, we need to be careful in sort of when we're sending this information home or engaging with parents, that we've helped them also go through the grieving process and help them be help with their child's awareness of these various situations, so that they then can be the supportive role in making it stick. But sometimes they're not quite ready, along with the children, but a lot of times parents are not quite ready to engage. And sometimes they just need a little hand-holding. You know, we do a lot of videotaping of what this looks like, and in some of my trainings that I provide to parents, I videotape myself with my own children and at communication works when we're working with these children, so they can see what it really looks like to infuse this vocabulary and activities, and they say, oh, okay, now I can do it. But they might not be ready right away. So that's important to be aware of, too.
Your book also emphasized that charting is very important. I would think charting is important not only for the kids, but for the parents as well, to kind of give them sort of a baseline.
Yes, yes. So there is a chart in the back of my book, and it's a chart for all the different activities in the book and the areas where they might need to focus on. So if you know your child needs to focus on imagination and play or nonverbal language or executive function, you can go to the chart and look at those areas and then find the activities in the book that support those areas. But also, when you're working with your child, you know, you might have goals from the school that you're working on that teachers can help you and therapists can help you with goals for home. And it's good to know a baseline, to know where your child started. And you can do that by charting data and just sort of say, oh, well, they did that. You know, I really had to walk through it with them. And the first time we did it together, I had to model the whole activity in terms of making dinner together or sequencing the steps of what's involved in making dinner together. And then the next time I put out some visual cues and they were able to do it with modeling and visual cues, or they were able to read the recipe on their own and we did it together. Then the next time maybe it just took a little bit of prompting to say, oh, what do you think comes next, which is what we call indirect prompting. And then maybe from there, you know, over a few months or even a year, they're able to do that same cooking activity on their own. So it's really good for us as therapists and parents to work together to see how these skills are developing and how progress is being developing. And that can be done behaviorally by looking at a child's incremental behaviors and specific activities and then charting on it to be able to see how they're progressing.
Interesting. These effective strategies for infusing social-emotional learning into everyday activities that you just mentioned?
Yes. Yes, there are, we can use them throughout everyday activities, and you know, sometimes it's hard for parents to be able to be aware of these things and to have mm-hmm. the data right next to them. So that's when we can enlist the professionals to say, can you help me with a chart or, you know, a visual tool that I can use at home? Maybe it's even just sequencing the steps for different things, and then I can make tick marks next to it. But we can work together with professionals to make it easier for parents at home.
Wonderful. Please tell us about the mood meter.
So this is a, like I mentioned, visuals can mm-hmm. be very, very helpful for our students. There's so many different ways that we learn, and most of our students with social challenges need visuals in order to help. So we can, you know, do auditory, and parents can be telling them what to do all the time. I try to stop being a nagger in terms of a mom, in terms of barking commands at my kids and, mm-hmm. you know, having them follow directions by verbal commands. And so we can set up various visual cues around the house. And the mood meter is wonderful for a visual for figuring out where our child is in terms of their emotional regulation. So we can have it on the refrigerator, we can print it out from the book and laminate it and take it with us. And if our child, we're not really sure how they're feeling, we can give it to them and say, how are you feeling right now? And maybe they're not feeling too energetic, or maybe they're feeling kind of sad or grumpy, and they don't really want to go to the play date right then. And so we can talk about different ways where we can give them tools or strategies to help them increase their mood if they're feeling kind of down, or calm themselves down if they're feeling kind of energetic, and help them. But it's a way for us to identify how they're feeling, to build emotional vocabulary, and we can use it on ourselves too. So if a child, I love that when children mm-hmm. turn it around and say, Mom, it looks like you're really kind of stressed out. Why don't you look at the mood meter and tell us how you're feeling?
Yeah.
So it's a great way for, there's a lot of faces on there with funny expressions, and so that we can increase the emotional vocabulary for kids and identify how they're feeling.
One of the things that you cover in the book as well is the six sides of breathing. Can you tell us a little
mm-hmm.
bit more about that?
Yeah, actually that's from Leah Kuyper's curriculum, The Zones of Regulation. And she was an occupational therapist that worked at our center for a few years, and we collaborate a lot together. And she contributed to the book. And actually, when she was working at Communication Works, she was teaching one of our students how to do the four square breathing, which is a square, and you put your finger on each side of the square, and you breathe in, and then go over and hold, breathe out, hold, breathe in, hold, breathe out, hold. And one of our students said, you know, I really don't understand that. I think it should be the six sides of breathing with the hexagon. And so, you know, following the child's lead and, you know, making his opinions valid, she changed it. And so she turned it into the six sides of breathing. And it's a great way for children to, you know, they can do it on their pants leg, or you can laminate it and put it on their desk, or it can be at home. And they can practice the six sides of breathing in terms of breathing in and holding their breath and breathing out, because that can really help them calm down. And so it can be something that they can do when they're feeling like they're starting to get agitated or frustrated, or a little bit what we call a heightened state of alertness, or mm-hmm. when they're really upset, that breathing can help them. And so it's just a cue for them to be able to remember to use that breathing.
Wonderful. Another section that I like very much is, I'm thankful for worksheet coupon.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about that.
Yeah, this is one that's great for Thanksgiving, of course, because, and I started it when we put them out at all of the place settings for Thanksgiving to, you know, we go around at our Thanksgiving dinner and say what we're thankful for. And some of the children have a hard time thinking about what they're thankful for. And so we started it at Thanksgiving, where I sent it out ahead of time and the parents helped their children that were coming think about the things that they were thankful for. And so it was helpful for that. So parents can use it at Thanksgiving, and it's just sort of a writing down the various things in their lives that they're thankful for or grateful for. It could be, you know, things that they're doing with their family or people. You can also use this. We do it, you know, at our weekly family meeting that we do, you know, what are we compliments and what are you grateful for? And there's been research to show that by focusing on the things that you're grateful for helps you with peace of mind and being able to realize the good things in life and not think about focusing on the bad things. We actually, in therapy, sometimes we make a grateful journal or a little book to think about the things that make us feel happy, so we can focus on those things rather than the things that make us frustrated or upset. And also, too, it helps us step into the shoes and think about others and the things that other people do for us in our lives that make us thankful and grateful, like our teachers. Oh, my teacher helped me today with this math problem that I was really stressed out about. Or I was so thankful for Mr. Steve at our school, who's our janitor, and he helped me get the ball down from the roof. So thinking about others and ways that they contribute to our lives can help children with perspective taking along with gratitude.
Wonderful. Do you have recommendations for parents who are looking for additional information about after school and weekend activities?
Absolutely. And I included this in the book because I think it's really important. You know, sometimes our children don't fit into the box of traditional camps or traditional outside activities in terms of soccer and baseball or ballet or things like that. So it's important to think outside of the box or follow your child's lead in knowing what they're interested in. So say they're really interested in Pokemon or playing games like Magic the Gathering, which is really popular these days. Mm-hmm. Maybe researching various activities like clubs, like they have a lot of clubs for these Magic the Gathering groups at the comic strip stores and the game stores. So things like that can be helpful. Or if your child does need to have physical activity, which they all do, maybe they're not going to do a team-based group sport activity, but they could do something like karate or tennis or swimming. Or if your child's interested in art, getting them involved in a clay class or things like that, that can they can share space with others, but maybe not be so much pressure in terms of the social, you know, passing a ball to each other or getting frustrated about other kids being fairness with, you know, stealing a base or things like that. So thinking about the things that they're interested in and following their lead in that area. Also, there's hangouts at libraries that are great for children, and there's many, many different organizations now. Some franchises are developing places for kids to hang out. Like there's one called We Rock the Spectrum that's a sensory gym for kids. And there's one in Berkeley, California, where close to where I live here in Oakland. And we're going to be collaborating with them. And they do, it's a huge 10,000-foot gym where they can be, there's zip lines and places for the kids to have sensory activities and jumpy houses so that parents can go there and the kids can be around each other and interact but not have so much pressure. There's also some, we do hangouts at our center on some Friday nights where we have movie nights and game nights. My colleague has a practice in Boston, in Princeton, and it's called Social Village. And on the weekends, they hang out with other kids and they play Magic the Gathering and Pokemon and chess, and they practice some of these skills together in a more fun and safe environment. So there's a lot of different sort of out-of-the-box thinking for parents to look into for their children if they don't fit into the typical after-school activities or camp activities that I would highly recommend researching.
Very interesting. What is the greatest challenge, if any, in achieving success?
You know, I think that we talked about this a little bit, but I think it's sort of defining success.
Okay.
So, like, yeah, I mean, the expectations are different for each kid. Like I said, there's a spectrum, and defining success is different for each person. So, like I mentioned, you know, sharing space with other kids can be success for one child and one family, versus success for some kids can be going to college and having a roommate or actually holding down a job and making one extra friend. So I think that those can be the challenges in terms of the expectations. Another challenge that I've found myself and I think is really hard to watch with our parents is it can be challenging to collaborate with other caregivers and professionals. So making sure that, you know, and the bureaucracy in terms of getting the child what they need in the school system or outside the school system can be very challenging for parents. And it's hard to watch because they have enough obstacles as it is. So they have to navigate and sometimes fight for what their children need in the school systems or outside of the school systems for independent living and things like that. So I, you know, that's a lot of what we, there's advocates out there. We help with that a little bit in our practice, but I think that can be a huge challenge for success and very discouraging for parents. So it's hard to watch, and it's good for us to be aware of as professionals so that we can support as needed.
Interesting. Do you have some success stories you can share with us?
Oh, yes. Big smile on my face I have because I, you know, I try to focus myself on the positive and be grateful because there's a lot of, you can imagine there's a lot of heartache in our practice and challenging situations that come up, especially because we're working in social groups and trying to navigate all that. But just yesterday I was working with, I was helping out in a social group and I was working with three children that are diagnosed with autism, and their success is just in terms of their goals right now are being we players versus being me players. So they're practicing interacting with each other using puppets. And, you know, before they would just, you know, go to the puppet bin and pick their puppet and they would just want to think about their puppet by themselves and play with the puppet and feed the puppet and talk to their puppet themselves. And we've come a long way. I've seen them, you know, a few months ago, and now they're sitting at the table, and with a little bit of prompting, they're actually, you know, pretending that they're at the lunch table at school and asking each other what the person is eating and maybe even making pizza for each other with their puppets. So I was so proud to see that. And, you know, my favorite success stories are when parents tell me that the children turn it around onto them. So my cousin once told me this story. Her son, who has autism, was learning about the sizes of a problem because, you know, there's small sizes of a problem, which Carrie Dunbaran talks about with her 5-point scale. It's a size one, whereas, you know, you spilled some water, it's no big deal, or your shoe's untied, it's no big deal, and the reaction should be pretty small too, versus a 5 on the scale of a 1 to 5, where we're having an earthquake and a fire drill and, you know, affects a lot of people, and it's a really big deal, really big reaction. And so we teach kids about that, and we teach the parents too. And then sometimes the kids, it's so wonderful, they turn it on their parents. So my cousin said that they were in the car and she was getting really upset because they were late for somewhere and she was getting upset. And he could tell that she was getting upset. And he says, "Mom, you know, maybe you should do some deep breathing because this really is a small problem. It's probably about a 1 or a 2. And so, you know, the kids are learning it so much that they're helping their parents. And then also just general success stories. I have to say I'm so proud of my son. You know, even over this year that he's been diagnosed with ADHD, first he was really upset and, you know, didn't want anybody to know about it. And he's come so far. And the other day he even asked me, he said, "You know, Mom, are my kids going to have ADHD too?" And I said, "You know, honey, I'm not sure. Maybe. We don't really know." And he said, "Well, it would be okay if they did because I like who I am." And then he was even talking, when I asked him if it was okay for me to mention him, I was going to be speaking on a radio show, and I asked him if it was okay to mention, you know, our story, and he said, "Sure, Mom, I'd be happy to. I'm going to be famous now. Maybe we can even present together sometime." So I was so proud of him, and I have parents, I actually had a parent reach out to me a few days ago and telling me that her son is doing very well at this technology school, living with his roommate, and he has a girlfriend. And I just, you know, I'm just so proud of them. And I have another student who's at Stanford, you know, navigating the social things, and they can make a lot of progress. And I hear success stories all the time. So it's very hopeful and good to focus on.
Fantastic. Where can someone go to buy the book, get more information about you, and keep up with your latest happenings?
Oh, thanks for asking. It's I do a lot out there to share information. As I mentioned, I love gathering and sharing information. So MakeSocialLearningStick.com is my website, where there's a lot of blogs and reviews and articles, and where I'm going to be speaking, and I share a lot of free handouts and videos that I put in my presentations on there. My blog on there is more geared towards how I'm infusing this in my own life with my own children, so it's more personal about me. I do blog on Communication Works, which is cwtherapy.com, and other therapists from our group blog on there as well, so that's another newsletter to join. To buy the book, is you can get it on aapcpublishing.com, or it's also available on Amazon.
Fantastic. By the way, we're coming close to the end of the hour. Since our show is about people, family, and living life, would you like to share a recipe for living with our listeners this morning?
Sure. I love that you asked this question. And I was thinking about this, and I think lately I've been thinking more about the recipe being that I would have myself and other people follow is doing more of what makes you happy and really trying to be mindful in those moments when you're happy. And the more that we focus on those special moments and how much they bring us joy, I think it's contagious to other people and our family and our children and the community at large. So just thinking about that, maybe writing down the things that we're grateful for and focusing on the things that make us happy and doing more of those things is the recipe for what I'm going to be focusing on and I share with other people in my life.
That's fabulous. Elizabeth, thank you for the wonderful recipe for living and for spending this hour with me on From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio. It has been a pleasure. Thank you and have a blessed day.
Thank you so much for having me. It was a joy.
Wonderful.
Take care. Bye-bye.
To all our listeners, please join me next Tuesday morning. My guest will be Marie Georgopoulos. She is an intuitive counselor, healer, and spiritual mentor. Marie will be hosting and conducting her first Meditation for Moms series. She will be discussing how you can reclaim the real you with transformational meditation. Marie will also be talking about the launching of her new worldwide consciousness movement, Meditation for Moms. For additional information about this show and future shows, please go to fmmktalkradio.com. Once again, please plan to join Marie Georgopoulos on her debut Meditation for Moms series starting next Tuesday. Thank you for listening and have a blessed week. Bye-bye.